no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Brian Karam. He's a White House columnist. He writes for Salon. He's the author of Free the Press, The Death of American Journalism and How to Revive It. And he's also the host of the podcast, Just Ask the Question. I always love talking to Brian, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Brian Karam. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Well, thank you, Kimberly. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
Happy holidays. How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was great. Family was around. We made turkey and ate razzleberry dressing, and we had a good time.
What's razzleberry dressing?
I don't know. Horton hears it. No, wait a minute.
That's the Grinch
who stole Christmas. That's it.
That's right. So I read your piece on sweet potato pie. That's my dad's favorite. So it trumps your pumpkin now?
Oh, yeah. Well, I made sweet potato pie for the first time when I was in my early 20s. My wife and I had a couple of close friends from college, and she was from St. Louis, and her mother made it and taught it to me when I was about 21, and I have made it ever since then, and I love it better than pumpkin pie.
Wow. Yeah, so does my dad. Honestly, I don't even know if I've ever had it. And we had it this year.
Great.
I just didn't have any of it because I didn't want the pumpkin flavor. I'm the white lady who I do like pumpkin spice, but I'm not completely obsessed with it, you know.
No, I like sweet potatoes. I thought, you know, don't give me this knockoff pumpkin pie shit. I don't want it. And then I tried it, you know, come on, sweet potatoes. I never liked sweet potatoes. And then I tasted sweet potato pie. I was like, all right, pumpkin, I'm sorry, you gotta go.
Move aside, pumpkin.
Yeah, I have a new love in my life, and it's not you.
Okay, so now what I want to ask you about, and I saw you posting it, and it's been about a month or two. Did your son win an Emmy?
Yes, he did. Both of my sons, they won an Emmy in New York Emmy for a film that they did. It's called Anamoya, and it's a science fiction flick, and it's about a 30-minute movie, and now they want to turn it into a feature.
Really? Oh my God, that's so awesome.
Yeah, it's a really cool Anamoya. The title of it is basically it's about remembering. It's nostalgia for a past you didn't live. So if you wanted to live in the 1860s, that's called Anamoya. And so this is about someone in the 2060s who wants to live at the end of the 20th century, and she fantasizes about it. And then there's a time travel element involved, and it's pretty cool.
That's totally fascinating. Do you have anything to do with that? Like, are you involved in any way?
What did I have to do with that? Very little. I think I may have been a small part in it, but I just helped him out as a good dad does. Helped him promote it.
Okay, so before we get into politics, I just want to ask, like, aside from singing and performing, because we all know you do that, what do you do for fun?
Let's see. I could be rude and crude, but what do I do for fun?
We love rude and crude.
Yeah. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, baby.
All right. Yeah, that's about it, right? That's where it all, that's what it all boils down to. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Okay, so let's start with the first question. I just want to hear what your personal takeaways for this Tennessee election, the special election we had on Tuesday. What were your takeaways?
That's a good question. I saw the Tennessee election, and of course, it was a closer election than many were predicting, which would give Democrats some hope. But what I also saw out of it is that there is this continuing mindset, and it isn't a majority of people in the United States, but it's a majority, it's close to being a majority of people who vote in the United States still believe that in the red MAGA bull. And you've got to turn out more voters. You've got to turn out 80 to 90% of voters. We just have to exercise our rights in a democracy. And I can't remember what the final results were as far as turnout in that election. But I'm always left thinking, look, I know across the United States, more people are registered as Democrats, but more Republicans vote. And that's ultimately what I saw as the downfall for the Democratic candidate in the district. Plus the fact that you've got a red district where they spent millions, and I mean millions, to get a MAGA person elected. And it's got to be, I want to hear more Democrats going out, talking to voters, going, what is it that you need? Rather than telling us why they think they are right, even if they are, they've got, which is one of the hooks that got Trump and MAGA going, was like they listened to people and bought their line of BS, but it helped them in the election. So that's what I took from it. Whether or not it means there's hope for the Democrats or not, sure, there always is, because ultimately I think Democrats believe in the one thing that we all believe in, the Constitution, but it's how they communicate to the voters. And so I was left with a wee bit of hope because there was a narrowing of the gap, but I really thought that race was winnable. And at the end of the day, the Democrats lost it. And that's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, and then let's go back though to the elections prior, which was New York, Virginia. And we did see Mamdani, and then we also saw Abigail Spanberger, which I don't think people would generally classify, you know, put them together in the same type of Democrat, yet they both won, and they both ran on affordability and the cost of things and just, you know, the Main Street issues. So moving into next year, we're headed to this new election year. Go ahead.
You talk about the two Democrats that you thought were strange bedfellows. Who would ever thought that Mamdani and Donald Trump would be in bed together? That's, I mean, at the end of the day, I was going, you heard Donald talk, and then he was going, it's something to be the mayor of New York City. It sounded almost like Donnie wanted to be the mayor of New York City rather than the president. And now it's all about business. He's got business to do in New York. Mamdani's a smart politician, knows he's got business to do in D.C., so they're going to try to work together. That actually gave me a little bit of hope.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, though? There was a guy on Facebook, and he opined what he thought happened as far as that whole – I mean, it was like optics were weird, right? You know, Trump was looking up – I mean, there was that joke. I think it was The Onion. It wasn't The Onion. It was just some random person on the internet who said something about Donald looking at Mamdani – the same way he looks at Satan in South Park. And but this guy on Facebook broke it down, and I'm going to try to remember what he said, but the gist of it was that Mamdani was dealing and knew he was dealing with a narcissist, and he just wasn't reacting. And if Trump tried to say anything to him that would, if he was looking for a reaction, Mamdani just played it totally straight, and he was never thrown by anything Trump said. He was never overly impressed with anything. And so ultimately it led the narcissist Donald to run out of ways to overcome. And then so the idea is,
are you talking about privately or publicly?
Publicly.
I disagree with that. Publicly. Yeah. Publicly, those two in the Oval Office that day were, glad handing and slapping each other. I had a completely different read on it. And my read was that Donald Trump is not very good around people who know how to handle him, and that when he sees someone that's potentially powerful, he sucks up to them. No, and I think he was trans. Everything with Donald Trump is transactional. Mm-hmm. He doesn't run out of fuel. He hasn't yet, anyway.
Right.
He just changes his method of doing things. So he even came to the point where he called Mamdani a communist, and Mamdani called him a fascist, and they're still smiling and shaking each other's hands. It's transactional. Yeah. Donald Trump knows there's stuff that has to be done. He's not going to overly anger the guy, and he probably had, if there's any such thing as genuine with Donald Trump, he genuinely liked him. Mm-hmm. And so that makes a big difference. And Mamdani could have said nothing more than, hey, it's great to meet you. You know, I'm not that bad a guy. And after that, Donald Trump could have said, I'm not that bad a guy. And the love fest began. But you also can't take Donald Trump seriously at this point because Donald Trump's insane. He's delusional. So it's kind of overanalyzing it to say that to me, Donald Trump is simply a guy. Everything with him is transactional. He saw something in a transaction with Mamdani, so he was friendly.
And then he started dressing like him.
Well, don't get me started there. I've often wondered about his, I've heard him in the East Room, me and a Secret Service agent one day when he came out and he was talking about those magnificent specimen of men. Yeah. He was talking about the Clemson football team. And I looked at the Secret Service agent and I go, did I hear that right? He goes, closeted.
Oh, my God. Well, what was the other, Roy Cohn was gay. And then, I know, I know that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I do remember that scene from, what is the name of that movie about Donald Trump? The one that came out right before the election.
Yeah, I even reviewed it.
I think the name of it.
Yeah. So it's the guy, the Winter Soldier, who plays him.
Right. Yeah. Last movie about him. Anyway, it was like there was that scene where he kind of was walked in on Roy Cohn having sex with another man, and Donald just looked on with interest. He didn't look on with lust. But he was kind of interested. And so, people have wondered about that. And then, of course, there was the whole praising Arnold Palmer's penis, right before the election, going on and on about how big it was. So that was kind of weird.
Who in the hell would ever think that we would be at this point in our lives in discussing politics? I mean, there's so much going on. And Donald Trump has us talking about everything except what
politics
matters.
There you go. Okay, well then, since you said that, now I'm going to say that, we all know he's unhealthy. He looks unhealthy. We don't know how long he has, but he's not going to be alive forever. He's not going to be the president forever. So regardless if it's because he leaves this term early.
Your lips to God's ears. He thinks otherwise, but go ahead.
I know. But, let's just say that he is no longer president for whatever reason, and then whatever. What happens when he's not in charge anymore? Like, do you have an idea of what happens to the Republican Party?
I'm more worried about what happens in the United States.
Yeah, but what do they do?
At some point in time, it looks like they're putting J.D. Vance in the bullpen and warming him up as if he's a short-term reliever, fearful that something will happen to Donald Trump prior to the end of his term, which is still 1,143 days away. And so at some point in time, the 25th Amendment becomes a real possibility, but you can't say much of a real possibility considering that Kristi Noem was in a cabinet meeting yesterday thanking Donald Trump for making sure there were no hurricanes hitting the United States this year.
Unbelievable.
And he's also responsible for the sun rising in the East, I guess.
Yeah.
He still has godlike status in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
As he begins to falter, if the cabinet doesn't turn, if J.D. Vance doesn't rally them and say, look, he's asleep in his soup 12 hours a day. It was a bad look in the cabinet meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's, if some point in time, if he can't get out of bed, although we've been told he works 12 hours, that's a lie, folks, because the Marine Corps Guard routinely, and Reagan, the Marine Corps guard routinely comes out around 9 or before 9 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. With Donald Trump, and this has come out usually around noon. So that tells you, and he's leaving by 4. So the fact is that Donald Trump isn't putting a lot of time or effort into this administration. At some point in time, it becomes critical. Now, I can't say when, maybe sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. And then there may be a movement to get to use the 25th Amendment. Mm-hmm. If he dies in office, it's J.D. Vance, and he comes in anyway. If he makes it to the end of his term, and he's not, you know, like blubbering like a cicada, and he's done, then the Republican Party has two people, and that is Marco Rubio, who has the man of many hats in this administration. Secretary of State is this key one, but he's also doing about 3 other things. I think he's even turning up the thermostat in the Oval Office for Donnie, and that's not an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance, who would love to be the heir apparent. Mm-hmm. None of them have the charisma, if I can use that term very loosely, mm-hmm. that Donald Trump has.
Right.
And none of them have the monetary backing. And Michael Johnson is a puppet for Trump, and so all of this can fall apart. Unless there's someone that steps forward that we haven't seen out of the woodwork and steps forward and takes Donald Trump's mantle. The MAGA people, the Six Flags Over Jesus members of the MAGA party, the Christian nationalists would love it to be JD, but he doesn't have the appeal nor the wherewithal to do it. So I don't know where it goes. And anybody who says that they do, well, they're probably the same people that said Donald Trump would never be elected.
Now we are hearing that there might be this mass exodus, all these people, all these Republicans retiring. We know Marjorie Taylor Greene is, and then I believe it was Nancy Mace. I think Nancy Mace said she might. Do you think that's just because they don't want to be defeated in the midterms?
I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is a weather vane that goes mm-hmm. whichever way the wind blows. And that's the greatest indication that there's a problem in MAGA. But in her resignation letter, she also signaled her QAnon supporters, another big group in the MAGA mm-hmm. empire, when she said, there is no grand plan. There is no fourth-dimensional chess game. Those are the cue words to QAnon that use those terms all the time to describe what Donald Trump is and what he's really doing. They think he has a master plan. Mm-hmm. She says there is no master plan. He's playing fourth dimensional chess. And she said, no, he's not. What the key that we saw and heard with her resignation from Congress, and she said these words to QAnon, the emperor has no clothes. And that comes from someone inside who believed in him for a long time. And that, to me, is a big cue as to where things are going in the Republican Party.
Okay, so I want to ask you if you agree with Wajaha Ali here.
My buddy Waj.
Yes. Let me see the date. He posted this on November 21st. So he said, I believe Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, and Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens have the pulse of the modern MAGA movement going forward. And he said, you can laugh at them and dismiss them as cranks, but you have to pay attention to what they're selling. And this is what comes after Trump. Do you agree with that?
He says it's Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, and who was the other one?
Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens.
Well, they're all idiots, but yeah, I think that they are, but they don't have the appeal.
Yeah.
They might be able to, they will be outliers for the rest of the Republican Party. The Republican Party has two groups, the Lincoln group and the Real Republican group that's Senator Danforth in Missouri has put together, that are trying to reclaim the Republican Party as it was, or mm-hmm. somewhere close to it. And those people probably have more money and more influence over traditional fundraisers than anybody that Waj has mentioned. But yeah, Waj isn't wrong. Those are the people who carry they're the QAnon MAGA Christian nationalist bunch who believe that the best way to deal with people is to insult them, intimidate them, and bully them.
Yeah.
And they're not going anywhere. I just don't think they're very electable.
Yeah, neither do I. I mean, like you said, there needs to be some kind of charismatic character to emerge. And right now, they don't have anyone. And I think, though,
do the Democrats, but that's another story.
No, but I think the difference, though, in those parties is that because the Republicans are making so many people unhappy, it's I agree with you, like, we don't have the Obama character that, this time around. Although it's still early, right? Because Obama showed up late. You know, he wasn't around.
Jimmy Carter showed
up
late.
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy showed up late.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's it. Who knows
right
where we are, you know, even 9 months from now in the midterms, you know, on our run up to the midterms. That is, we still have the spring to go through. Mm-hmm. God knows where we are in this country. And if the economy crashes and it has, and I don't want it to, but there's an indication that it's past the point of strain, and that it may be, you know, I don't know what the stock market did today, but there are concerns because Donald Trump continues to say, you know, like the price of eggs is 800% cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the last time I went into the grocery store and somebody paid me to take eggs. Which is what that would mean. So people know that that's bull.
Yeah.
And so I don't know where that leads, but yeah, there's trouble ahead, trouble behind. And now I'm quoting a rock band. So Casey
trouble
Jones, you better watch
ahead.
That. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, speaking of groceries, I do the grocery shopping. And it's Bob and me. And now I will say Bob and I both have, for the most part, we eat differently. So he eats his stuff, I eat my stuff. So our grocery bill has always been fairly high just because I am buying kind of like groceries for both of us. But let's say when we first got together in 2016, it was about $250 a week. I went to the grocery store the day after, it was Saturday after Thanksgiving. And there, I did buy a couple of more expensive things than I normally do. Like I bought some batteries and there were a couple of items that
oh,
I don't.
How dare you do that?
I know. But it was like, stuff that I don't buy every week, but I started running out of. And it was they all kind of hit on that week. But my grocery bill was $500. My shopping cart, I mean, it was full, but it wasn't like overstuffed full. $500 is fucking ridiculous. But yeah, so they haven't gone down.
No, they haven't gone down. And I used to, what I used to do, I add up the groceries in my head as my wife and I shop. And
you go shopping with your wife?
Of course.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's necessary. So we go shop and I used to add up and just take the number of it real simple, but you know, I like to guess how much my bill is going to be. And I'm usually within a dollar or two. I'm doing it in my head. It's just a reflection of my OCD. So I'm usually, you know, within a dollar or two. And it used to be that if, all right, we went out and we bought 30 or 40 items, the average price, so it doesn't matter what you buy at the end of the day, when you all add it up, the average price, or the medium, or the average price is about $4 to $5.
Mm-hmm.
Today, so if I bought $25 items, I'd be spending about $100.
Yeah.
Today, if I go out and buy those same 25 items, it's easily $140.
Mm-hmm.
So that just tells you that the price of, and this is just average grocery shopping, with no added, you know, just the weekly stuff that you buy to get through the week, is on the way up, and everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't sit there and BS people about the fact that, you know, I see people using their credit card. They're using credit to buy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would walk around with a fistful of dollars. I remember he could get two grocery carts, you know, him, his wife, four kids. Pop would go to the Kroger. That's Ralph's for the people on the West Coast. And he would go to a Ralph's or the Kroger's, and he'd get two grocery carts full for $100.
Wow.
I can't do that.
No.
And he'd pay with cash, and I can't do that. Nobody can do that. So, you know, people are the real problem with our economy is that, and people have said it before, not me, but, you know, not just me. But I reflect on when I was a kid, one member of the family worked, one of the parents worked, and the other one stayed home to take care of the kids. Now both of them work, both members of the household work, and both of them usually have to have side gigs. This is an impossible situation made so by oligarchs who continue to cut and undercut and steal from the rest of us. It is frightening.
Yes, it is. Okay, wait, I want to go back to this whole thing with the Republican Party. So do you think, I mean, I know Bob is all about we need to make the Republican Party a minority party.
Well, it is.
It is. Well, yeah. But I mean, it's loud and it's got power now. So
it's a super minority that votes. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. But I mean, as far as like the party is concerned, and as opposed to looking for the leader of a party, but like, do you think the party stays together? There are people who are, you know, and I'm not saying I buy into this, I'm just throwing it out there. But I mean, there's people talking about a civil war within the Republican Party. Do you think that it's going to, I mean, it's going to have to change, right? Because it's kind of
not if they keep getting elected. If they keep getting elected, why would they change?
Yeah.
You know, we have, I said it before, we have two political parties in this country. One has no heart and one has no head. The Republicans have no heart. They have none. They do whatever they can to win. They lie on a daily basis. But the Democrats kind of do too. The only thing that makes the Democrats say they have no head for it, they really don't run real well. They don't listen. I've had so many conversations with older Democrats. They need new leadership. The Democrats need new leadership and new people, and I'm talking in their 30s and 40s to step up. And they need, what the Democrats need more than anything else is to go to people and go, what is it you need? How can I help? What should I do? Now, you can have your own ideas, and you may not listen to, but people want to believe that they've been heard.
Yeah.
So that when you go into office, you do some of that. But a lot of Democrats that I talk to, and I've interviewed a bunch of them that are running, and they're all about telling me why the Republicans are wrong and why they're right. And I got to tell you, that doesn't cut it with if you want independent or voters on the fence. You've got to, it's like we're however low the Republicans, you know, place the bar, the Democrats can't crawl over it. How bad is your party that you can't find someone to beat Donald Trump? That's
no, I totally agree with you. But then I'm curious though, because I think that we saw, and about the party changing, because I think we saw in whenever the Tea Party came in, when it was like 2012, 2011, 2012. Or 2010. I can't remember.
I think it all started with Newt Gingrich during the that's where the real divisiveness and the, you know, that's where that was the beginnings of the Tea Party.
Yeah.
And Newt Gingrich was made possible because of Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan was made possible because of the shit stain that was Richard Nixon. Oops, can I say that on your show?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so the root cause, remember, Richard Nixon had the Southern strategy. Mm-hmm. That's the only way he was going to win. And he lied about so many things, and he was a POS, and he lost to Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was a decent human being, but like every Democrat before and since, the Democrats ate their own, didn't communicate very well. That's the biggest problem of the Democratic Party. They mean so damn well, and they communicate so poorly, and they feel so righteous about what they do. And I want more than anything else to support them, because a lot of them are really, really good people. And most of the Republicans I know are pieces of shit. And they've come into office based on the Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich model of divide and conquer. And that's the cause. And Donald Trump is, you know, just the latest manifestation. So I think that's that's where I'm falling on, is I want better communicators.
Yeah, so do I. Well, what do you think of Mom Donnie's popularity and how that relates to the Democratic Party? Do you think, obviously Chuck Schumer didn't want, I hear, did Chuck Schumer?
Can't Chuck Schumer just sit down and shut the fuck up?
We all wish that.
My God.
I know.
He's like the old guy going, "You kids get off my lawn, or I'll write you a heavy letter." I'm going, God, Chuck, you don't, you know, I know that it was when they go low, we go high.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work for many Democrats. So now it's, you know, but when they go low, you don't have to go lower. Just take the legs out from under them. You don't have to go low. Just reframe the argument and point it and flip it, because the Republicans always, you know, even this stuff, when they go high, when they go low, we go high, or we don't have to go, you know, high. They're always allowing the Republicans to frame the argument. Mm-hmm. And so I want a Democrat to come out and go, look, I want what everybody wants. I want to be with my family. I want to do this. I want to do that. Don't you think we need health care for everybody? I mean, and point out the inconsistencies and frame it so that you highlight how screwed up the Republicans are by favoring the ultra rich, instead of telling me the Republicans are wrong, because all you're doing is pointing at their frame and going, nah, 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 nah. Instead, reframe it and say, listen, all of us, we want the same thing. Republicans, MAGA, you know, it used to be, I disagree with what you say, but will defend to death your right to say it. Nowadays in politics, it's, I disagree with what you say, and therefore, because I disagree with you, I will kill you. And that's on the, especially on the right. The left will cancel you, the right will kill you. Take your pick.
Well, what do you think of Mom Dami's influence on the Democratic Party? Do you think it's going to reach farther than what we're seeing right now? Do you think it just stays in New York?
Depends on the success that he has and the ability for him to frame himself as, you know, get away from the people who call him a socialist and a communist, because those are two words that mean so little. He's very progressive, and maybe too progressive for some people, but progressive enough that what he's talking about resonates with New Yorkers and will resonate across the country if you change the frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he's not a communist.
No.
And a socialist? I mean, what the hell do you think roads are, and schools and hospitals and police departments and public services? Mm-hmm. They're all social programs.
Yeah.
It's the democracy and the fact that everybody has a voice, and that the average person needs to be heard more than the average oligarch. Mm-hmm. I'm sick and tired of the people who have the most money, and I'm talking about you. I'm not going to say who, Elon Musk, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to say Elon Musk, or, you know, all those idiots that have really nothing in common with anyone. They lead very private lives. They, you know, people want to say there's a conspiracy. No, they're just people that have likewise concerns, and there's very few of them, so they can talk to each other. It's not like they, you know, like they have a stamp or a book club or something, and they get together on Monday nights. It's just they all have the same interest. Well, we all have the same interest,
mm-hmm.
and we're a larger group than they are. And the politician who lets people understand that, and that's kind of what Mom Donnie did in New York, was making people aware of that fact that we all have more in common than that we have separate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the MAGA wants to paint that as a communist. It's a communist conspiracy. To whom? What the hell is, do you even understand what communism is? There's, you know, that's bull.
Yeah.
And as far as socialist, that's another line of bullshit, because socialism has been with the United States in some form or fashion, mm-hmm. since the very beginning.
Yes.
That's just, you know, it's the democracy part that counts. Not the fascist angle, not the egalitarian or the oligarch or the despotism of the Republican Party. And when Democrats call that out, they can make headway.
Okay, so now I want to ask you, I can only absorb so much, you know, especially after the election last year. It was really difficult for me And I was like, I can absorb a certain amount and then I'm done. So I want you to talk about, because I'm not going to be able to have any authority here, about the Hegseth murdering fisherman story that everybody's talking about. I mean, people are talking about the fact that he is probably going to, you know, Trump's going to get rid of him. So just talk about it. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, Donald Trump will get rid of him if Donald Trump wants to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. He'll keep him if he wants. He doesn't care about the pressure. They already tried to blame an admiral for it. Here's the problem with Pete Hegseth. He's a lying sack of shit with the mental acumen of a coconut who probably be better off preening in front of his makeup mirror and putting another tattoo on his forearm. This man is totally unserious. He's the epitome of a joke. Everyone I know in the military who knows him thinks he's an idiot. Overseas, he's seen as an idiot. In Europe, he is looked upon with about the same way that would you look on, you know, a court jester during the time mm-hmm. of King Henry VIII. And so when the statement that he said that reporters at the Washington Post made up the story about bombing the boat a second time and said they were all sitting in the comfort of their air-conditioned offices and made this stuff up, I would remind everyone that, and that there was the fog of war involved, I would remind everyone that Pete Hegseth made his decisions in the in the confines of a very air-conditioned office, either in the Pentagon or the White House. He's never seen combat. He doesn't know what fog is. This wasn't a war. This was two missile strikes on a boat. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've come out and defended it, saying it looked like the people were still going to attack, so we shot it a second time. I don't know how they were going to attack when the missile that they had took out the boat on the first one, so I find that to be specious at best. But Hegseth, getting rid of Hegseth, they will likely sacrifice the admiral first if Donald Trump is looking for a whipping boy. And I will remind everyone, especially since I believe the admiral is African-American and Donald Trump is a racist and so is Pete Hegseth, they would probably do that. The fact of the matter is these are all illegal actions.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's legal about this. There has been no due process. We aren't at war. We're just blowing shit up indiscriminately, claiming that we're anti-drug, while at the same time, what did Donald Trump do? Gave a pardon to the head of to the former president of Honduras, who was involved in millions of dollars worth of cocaine trafficking. That you're okay with, but it's the soy boy beta male image of being tough. When Pete Hegseth says kill them all, as he's reputedly said, I don't have a hard time believing that Pete Hegseth said that.
Yeah.
And I have no problem believing that the military did that. They'll follow those orders if they believe them to be legal. And that's one of the reasons why those six Democrats came out and said it's okay not to follow an illegal order. And imagine that you have someone warning you not to break the law. And the, you know, the minister more sinister of war, Pete Hegseth, and your president tell you that's wrong and that you're a traitor if you do that. What that tells you is that the head of the Department of Defense and the president of the United States are both criminals. Only a criminal will tell you, you know, it's okay to break the law. That's the very essence of being a criminal. So Pete Hegseth is a coward and a criminal, and most of his experiences on Fox News. In fact, most of the people that Donald Trump has hired are on Fox News, who kissed his ass. And you know, that I keep going back. This is another example. This whole Pete Hegseth thing is another example of the fact that we don't have a real president. We have a reality show. Mm-hmm. And these are all reality show actions. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned, we hear. Thank you for your attention to this matter, we hear. We get memos from the White House that say Trump will make a surprise announcement at 2:00 and they won't tell us what it is. This is all the stay tuned aspect. They all tune in for further info, driving up the audience. We don't have a Rose Garden anymore. He calls it the Rose Garden Club. Everything about this guy is just simply salacious, horrible fiction.
Okay, I have two more questions.
I'm here for you.
So what kind of impact do you think Mark Kelly is having with he's very angry, he's speaking out, he's pissed off at Donald Trump, and he wants people to not follow those illegal orders. So, you know, we've heard before that we would love, you know, in this time to have that one voice. Oh God, what was that guy's name? Have You No Shame or whatever that guy was back in the day. I can't think of his name right. It's all escaping me. Back in the Nixon time. When that
Have You No Shame, Mr. President?
There you go.
Yes.
So, like, we don't necessarily have that right now because of the internet and how divided we are and all of that. Although, you know, Mark Kelly, I know that he's a Democrat, and I know that it's not like MAGA's going to embrace him. But I think he does have some gravitas, and I'm just wondering, like, do you think that it makes a difference that he's speaking out the way he is now?
Yes. I think that whenever you have someone who's pushing back in the manner in which he is doing it, and here's a man who has – look, he was a fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
He led space shuttle missions. He's the husband of a woman who was a gun victim, a victim of gun violence. Here's a guy who is grounded and as steady as they come. And I know that it has an impact because I have relatives who are, you know, pro-Trump that are going, wow, this guy's pretty cool. So, yeah, he has above everyone else in the Democratic Party, and I don't know what his desires are for future office, but he has the ability to mobilize the Democrats with a fervor and a passion that I haven't seen out of anyone else. The closest to it would be Gavin Newsom, who's got a great hairdo and is really good with – he's got a great staff who trolls Donald Trump on the internet consistently and constantly. And I know there are people that – favor him for the presidency, and I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see if Mark Kelly is that guy.
Yeah.
I compare in a column I wrote recently, I compared the Trump administration to the Omegas in Animal House, and that Trump is Dean Vernon Wormer.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, well, that's Chip, and that would be that's JD Vance.
Right.
I would go with Doug Niedermeyer is Peg Seth.
Yes.
And Babs, the one who always wanted to date Niedermeyer, is Caroline Leavitt. And I said, you know, and most of the Democrats remind me of Stork or, you know, well, actually most of them remind me of Kent Dorfman. And I said, Chuck reminds me of Stork. I said, where is a John Blutarski who will stand up and go, hey, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Forget it, he's rolling. And I think that John Blutarski right now is Mark Kelly. I think he's standing up going, hey, nothing's over till we say
it is. We decide it is,
yeah. And I like that about him, you know, all kidding aside, because somebody's got to defeat, you know, the Greg Marmalards of the world and the Dean Vernon Wormers and the Chips and the Babs. I mean, these are bad people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we looked at it comedically, you know, but they were bad people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have no problem believing that Pete Hegseth as Doug Niedermeyer would stick a carrot in his mouth and go kiss a horse. So that's why I look at what Mark Kelly is doing and go, all right, there's a guy, and he's a guy who does, as you know, we've been talking about for the last half hour, he's a guy who does reframe arguments and sticks them squarely in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you trust him because, hey, the guy has done some real shit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. Could you imagine Pete Hegseth in piloting an F-18 or being an astronaut?
No.
He, you know, the computer would pull a 1001. I'm closing the pod bay doors and float him out in space.
Oh, my God. Wait, are you there? I thought you started to go out. Okay. Okay. So now I'm really all hopeful about Mark Kelly, and I'm wondering if maybe he is the charismatic Democratic character that will emerge. But I guess we'll just wait and see because we have so much time, right? I know that like Rachel Bitticoffer is like, I don't even want to fucking hear about 2028 right now. We got to get through 2026, and I do agree with her. But you know, I think that as we are all experiencing this nightmare, our minds want to go to 2028 and like have that Democrat elected and get out of this mess. And if it's not a Democrat, then I would hope that it would be a sane Republican, but I don't think there's any such thing. So, okay. Last question here. Now, when this time last year, we had no idea how things were going to unfold. You know, we knew it was going to be bad and some things could be predicted, not everything. So where we are today, how do you feel today versus how you felt about this country last December?
Oh, there's no comparison. Each day with Donald Trump gets worse. Mm-hmm. Where we were last December is our point, but where we are now is so we've rolled down the hill so much. Mm-hmm. This is, you get outside. All right. Take, for example, just in my field of profession, reporting. There is no independent press anymore. Mm-hmm. Forget it. If you can't stand up and tell some, and this, you know, this is why they won't let, you know, they try to take away my press pass, because Donald Trump, I could not, having been raised by my family and my dad and my mom, I could not stand there as Donald Trump called one female reporter a pig, mm-hmm. told another one to shut up, and told another one that she was insubordinate, and then told another one that she was stupid. I would say, Mr. President, come on. Mm-hmm. All kidding aside, treat us with a little bit of respect. Treat these women with some respect. Mm-hmm. That's how far we've fallen. In the first Donald Trump administration, we stood up for each other a little bit better. When April Ryan was picked on, me, Jim Acosta, John Carl, Peter Alexander stood up for when Acosta got in a fight in the East Room, Peter Alexander stood up for him. When I got in a fight and they tried to get rid of me, it was Acosta and others who stood up for me then. No, there's not any of that. We are so far removed from where we were after the election. I fear where we will be in 2026. My hope is that I do believe that people are getting fed up with the nonsense, because it's finally affecting them to the point where they've got to do something. And that's where we are right now. I don't know that this country does not exist. As if those people who say we're in a constitutional crisis, that's in the rearview mirror. We live right now in an autocracy where the elected president thinks he's a king. Hell, even Prince Harry came out and said, I thought you guys elected a king. He got in a little dig on us, yeah, after he got booed, you know, on television. So I'm not so sure that we will see the United States as I grew up and understood it back as it should be in my lifetime. My hope is that we do. It depends on it all really boils down to getting involved. And that means voting, but more than voting, going to the polls and helping out, volunteering, you know, getting in phone lines, phone banks, knocking on doors, getting the elderly to vote by driving them to the polls, standing in line. Kim, you wouldn't believe the people I've run into at these No King rallies. And I ask them, we're sick of Donald Trump. We're doing something about it. I go, great. Do you vote? No, my vote doesn't count. And I'm going, you will spend an entire day painting signs, standing in line, driving miles, marching to voice your disapproval, and you won't vote. That's the problem. Yeah. Folks, it doesn't work if you don't vote. You've got to get involved. So my hope is that we get more people involved, and then maybe we get the country back that we deserve.
Well, I agree with what you say, but I feel slightly more hopeful than you, and I'm not really sure why. And I don't think it's a Pollyanna thing.
Oh, you're giving me hope, baby. You're giving me hope.
Well, and I mean, I don't, I don't even have any evidence or anything like that. I mean, well, I guess I do have evidence. I mean, I think that, you know, for the most part, with the exception of Tennessee, we have been seeing some, you know, great Democratic wins since, you know, he lost or she lost. And,
yes.
You know, and
well,
I, and
the biggest ray of hope there really is Taylor Greene. When she comes out and says the emperor has no clothes, she's a weather vane. She's telling you it's falling apart.
Right.
And I do believe that in 2026, if the vote turns out, the Republican Party is screwed, blued, and tattooed.
Right. And it will. I mean, obviously, they're going to do they're going to try to stop the election, and they won't be able to. And they're going to do everything they can. But I think, you know, that, and I keep saying this, but like in 2018, we had the election, general election turnout for a midterm. And I have a feeling that because this time around the guardrails are no longer there at all and people are getting screwed in ways, new ways, he's found new ways to screw them. I think that we are going to see a big blue wave. And my fear, though, is that I don't want the Democratic Party to just depend on the fact that we are, you know, the voters are all so upset about Donald Trump. And then once he's gone, because in a way, that's what we did in 2020 and they never went away. Yeah. They just got stronger and they figured it out. And so I think that, you know, I'd like for the Democratic Party, if we're ever going to get back in power in any kind of big way, we have to make big sweeping changes. But that's for another show. So but I do have hope. So I don't know. I mean, I agree with everything you say, though. I mean, I know that I think things are going to get worse. And, you know, Heather Cox Richardson, who I just adore, was saying, you know, for the next several months, just expect it to get even worse. And so yes. I think we all need to, I just want to say this before we go though. I saw a lot of Democratic Eeyores for this entire year. Oh, that's it. We're toast. Democracy's over, blah, 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 blah. And I feel like, you know, until it's truly over, we'll know that it's over when we can't ever have, when Democrats will never win another election. When they fix everything. But it's not completely over. We are being run by an autocrat. We have a fascist government, but it can be changed. And so I think after that election, not the Tennessee election, but New York and all of that, and then it was just like off of No King's Day, I haven't seen as many Debbie Downer Democratic voters. So I think that's good. And I think that people are getting pissed off, but I think what we need to do is we need to vote so big and then they have to make those sweeping changes. So I do think there is stuff to be hope, you know, stuff we can be hopeful about. But I guess time will tell, right? Time will tell.
Yes. You got that one right. Only time will tell. And unfortunately, we've got a little bit of time before the 2016 election and
2026.
Yes, those who have seen 2026, and you're correct, and that's where we are now. It's going to get. It's, you know, Mary Trump said something to me that just has stuck with me, and it's so true. There is no worst with Donald Trump.
No,
every day is worse until he goes belly up, or you know. Just dives head first into his cornflakes and just, you know, babbles like a cicada. We're stuck with this. And it's not just Donald Trump. It's those idiots around him.
Yeah.
Stephen Miller, who is destined to, you know, wear orange. Pam Bondage, who is, you know, destined to do the same thing. And, you know, and of course, JD, I love my Sofa Vance. These people are all prison bound at some point in time. And Pete, you know, I love my makeup mirror headset. All of these people are just horrible people. And they've done some very horrible things. And, you know, the idea that they even, here's how worse it's going to get, right? They have a portal now on the White House. This is the White House website, a portal that, you know, you can chip in and tell us who are the bad people that are doing bad things for the press. These are fake news. And so I go, all right, somebody is propagating lies. So I filled it out and sent them back the information. Who's the bad actor? I said the White House. And I sent articles from the White House back to them. I go, I wonder if they'll ever get back to me, because they're the ones that are, they're proliferating the fake news.
Yeah.
And they're going to continue to do it. And there will be people that will believe them.
And then there are people that are going to be angry with him. And this is all going in the same place. You're right. 2026 is that's the, you know, right now, the next focus point.
Yeah, that's and we got it. We got to do it. And I do have high hopes for it. So please, dear Santa.
Yes. Yes.
My Christmas wish for 2025, six, whatever. All right, Brian, you know I just love talking to you because you're easy like Sunday morning. I wish I could
great
play that song.
I love that song.
I know, me too.
I'm thinking of Christmas time. I want to go to the Paul McCartney one. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Yes, that's I'm really trying to enjoy my holiday season this year because I do think we have hope. You know, we still have a lot of crap to go through, but we do have some hope. So I'm trying to enjoy this. But
well, hope is eternal.
It is.
Action makes a difference.
Yes, it does.
What's the saying I heard the other day that I love? Tough times don't last. Tough people do.
There you go. There you go. And that's so true. And all the Democratic Eeyores out there, remember that, please.
Yeah.
I don't want to see your negative. I don't want to see the negative.
I think it was Dana Delaney who said it on Tulsa King, but I still like it.
All right. So before I release you, please tell everyone where to go to find you.
Ah, well, salon.com once a week on Fridays for my weekly column. On Substack, it's Reporter's Notebook at Brian Karam. And at Brian Karam, wherever, you know, in social media. And the title of the name of the podcast is called Just Ask the Question, wherever fine podcasts are sold.
All right. Well, most of us follow you anyway, but anybody new out there, go follow Brian. And thank you for being a guest as usual. And I hope you have a wonderful, happy holiday.
You too. And to you and Bob, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and hope you guys have a great one.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All righty.
Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark, Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.